Steve, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill. And then the Wendy portion of the equation is also here today. It's both of us. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Bill.
I remember you from the old days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am happy to be back.
A lot of times when somebody takes a vacation, you almost need a couple of days just to unwind from the unwinding. Are you of that same category or not?
I could use one more day off, I guess.
Yeah.
We came home late Saturday night and needed the buffer day. You need to have a buffer day.
Mm-hmm.
You can't come back and go back to work the next day. You can't.
It's almost like astronauts when they come back from the moon and they put them in that little decompression chamber for a while. There should be a vacation decompression chamber.
Right.
Right?
I agree. Why are you laughing, Bertrand?
Well, just your definitiveness of it all, that you cannot do it. You can do it, it's just you prefer not to.
Difficult to do.
Listen, you're an avid world traveler. I am not. I am not very good traveling. I usually stress out about the flight. I stress out mid-vacation about the return flight.
Mm-hmm.
I did no stressing.
Oh, good for you. I'm with you. I like the decompressed day, but when we do overseas trips, I come to work the next day. Because...
Well, you have to, because otherwise you'd use up all your vacation days.
Time.
Yeah,
right, but you're also awake at 4 in the morning because of the jet lag.
Oh, sure.
Well, there was a two-hour difference. That took a little adjusting.
It's something. Now, your track record is anytime you visit any Disney property...
I've only been to Disney World.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. But
and it's not been great.
Your experiences have been less than pleasing. Through no fault of Disney's.
No.
Right? But this time around, you're all smiles.
It just worked out perfectly. I hate to use the term buffer day again, but we got there on a Saturday late afternoon, and Sunday was just pool day.
Yeah.
And that was fun.
It's a
and
good
then
way to do it.
Monday.
Hit it running.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I was 11 hours made it through Disney.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, so if people don't know this, in Anaheim, you have Disneyland, the one that's been there since the 50s, and then they also have Disney's California Adventure just across the road a piece.
There was a slight problem with that Disney California Adventure. DCA, we'll just call
DCA.
It.
DCA.
When we bought our tickets at the hotel for Disney,
yeah.
We said, let's get the park hopper so we can do both. We're going to be there. It's pretty early. And no one, I guess it's my own fault. I could have checked, but I just assumed both parks were open till midnight.
Right.
So at about 10 to 10, we're like, let's wrap up at DCA.
Yeah.
They closed at 10.
Oh,
so we wasted an additional $50 per person. That's $200. And never got in there.
Now, I know you well enough to know you've probably already filed a lawsuit against the Disney people.
No, but I did ask the woman the next day, I just assumed both parks were open. I know we used the first part of the park hopper. Is there any way they'll honor it another day? And she's like, no, I'm sorry. It says right here. And she
read the fine print, Bob. It says right here. You can't use it.
Mickey,
get out of my office.
I got a bone to pick with you. Because
pick away.
The lady turned the thing around and said, we have all the times listed here. Bill,
yeah.
It was like one normal piece of paper with tiny little boxes that list all the times for everything.
Yeah.
I said, I can't read that.
Too small.
I explained to you, this is our
small
first
world,
time
Wendy.
Here. I said, she should have reiterated, okay, park hopper,
right.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not her fault. We should have checked.
Right. Now, you could have, though, upon learning this, gone right back into original Disneyland.
We did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
We did.
Yeah.
But
that'll be their argument.
$50 extra.
Oh, yeah, okay, that is a little... $50 per ticket?
So $200. We didn't even go in.
Did you go the next day?
Well, then we needed a buffer day again, and those tickets wouldn't work. And even the lady at the desk was like, well, you could try it. Well, we're not going to try it, because then if they don't work...
Right.
You got to wait in line.
Yeah.
So that poor Jim is like Mr. like smooth over everything. He's just like, whatever, I've wasted $200 on other things. I said, it's $200.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write to Mickey. Yeah. I'm going to send him an email.
I won't be reading your letter.
I need your email address. M Mouse.
M Mouse.
Dot M O U.
Dot E D U. Dot blank U.
But it comes from Mickey. It's the best.
I know. Now I'm not mad. That was worth the $200.
Sure. Of course.
And then, so we had a buffer day. So that Monday was Disney World. Really enjoyed it. Pirates of the Caribbean is the best ride on the planet.
It's fun. It always ends the same way. You know that, spoiler alert. But it's fun to ride through there, isn't it?
This one's bigger and better than the one in Walt Disney World.
That's the only ride that's bigger at Disneyland than it is at Disney World. All the other ones are smaller.
A little smaller.
Yeah.
That was still fun. I did Splash Mountain. I did.
That's a big step for you because I know you have an aversion.
They make me do it every year. They say, you've done it every year. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to stop doing it. And they're like, you have to go as a family.
So do you, like, all day long, do you dread the fact that you'll be on that ride at some point during the day? Do you think about that all day? Like, you see it in the distance and go, oh, at some point, I got to ride on the log ride. I got to be on there.
I do have anticipatory anxiety. Yeah. So Dylan knows that, my youngest, and he always wants to go on Splash Mountain first.
But then you get it out of the way.
I do. And then.
But you got to admit, that is.
It's a great
ride. It's so much fun.
I got soaking wet.
And that one also smaller than Disney World. So the, you know, the big.
It felt bigger.
No, it's smaller. It is
smaller.
That
drop felt like 100 times worse than Walt Disney World.
No, Disney World's is the bigger one.
You'll have to try Disney World's next year to see.
Yeah, go back and see.
I do not want to go to Disney every year.
But what about the other roller coasters? There's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. There's Space Mountain. You didn't do those at all?
Well, not on the first day.
Yeah.
The boys went back the second day. I did not.
Oh.
That's how it works.
Oh.
They got. I did cry once.
Because why? What made you cry at the happiest place on earth?
First of all, it's not the happiest place on earth. This was like the first time our family really got along. Yeah. It was like amazing to me. There was one fight because the boys locked themselves out on the balcony. And that was it. And then the fight was over.
Sliding doors in a balcony in a hotel lock from the inside, don't they?
Yes, typically. But as I'm in the pool and I hear Dylan yelling, Mom. And I thought they were still in the hot tub. So I just ignored them.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, they can get out and come to me.
Sure.
So then it was like, I kept hearing it. So I went and checked in the hot tub and they weren't there. And I said, well, their room overlooks the pool. Maybe they're on their balcony.
Sure.
So then I went to look and they're waving to me. And I thought they were just saying, Mom. And
very friendly.
Like, we're locked out. I'm like, how did you do that? So I had a key to their room. I went and saved the day.
How long were they on the balcony for?
Probably about a half an hour.
Oh, all right. Like Mr. Magoo on land, just walking to the hot tub. Nope, they're not there. Walking back to the pool. Nope.
Hey, I am glad that I thought maybe they're just yelling to me to wave.
Because
otherwise,
having fun.
I tried to ignore them the first four times. You thought you heard Marco. They were playing that. Oh, my God. So I let them out, and they both had bruises because they got in a little scuffle on the balcony because they were blaming each other for who closed the door.
But can I tell you, a balcony is a very bad place to have a punch fight.
Yeah, Michael almost went over. Not really. Not really. But that, again, so I'm just thinking, you know, oh, these crazy teenage boys, the first time we get them their own room, look what's happening. And then as I'm out in the pool, I'm hearing other people from other balconies yelling, hello, hello. And of course, I ignored them because I'm trying to be stress-free.
It's your vacation.
And other people were saying, yeah, can I help you? Could you please tell the lobby that I'm locked on my balcony? So it happened to two other people.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't.
They're doing something wrong with the sliding glass doors. It's not your kids.
Can we go on vacation with you next year?
Please. Can we? Wait, let's take a break, and then we want to know what made you cry. Something made you cry at Disneyland. There's no crying at Disneyland. We'll find out what that is next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laff. It's Wendy Snyder. A quick warning. Sad story alert. Wendy's about to tell you why she cried at Disneyland, quote unquote, the happiest place on earth. What happened?
Well, this was a panic attack. I really had one. We did Splash Mountain, Haunted Mansion.
Did you go on the they had these trains where you go through little miniature versions of the scenes from all the Disney movies. It's called the Casey Jr. train. So you ride on this train, and then you go up and down these hills and mountains and around a lake, and then there's like Snow White's cottage, a miniature version of that, and all the different castles and stuff. It's ridiculous, but it's really cool to see.
We did not go on the train.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Darn it. Next year, because I think we're going to have to go back.
Yeah. Submarine ride?
I did. Loved that.
That's a lot of fun.
We really did a lot. Of course, you know, the boys, and I'll include Jimmy Mack in the boys category.
Mm-hmm.
They're experts. They love Disney. They researched it. They're like, we got to do this. We got to do that. And so then we go on the Raiders of the Lost Ark ride.
Yeah.
and we're waiting in line, and I think it's like we had also gone to Universal Studios, so I thought it was a ride like that, and they're like, no, Mom, it's a roller coaster. I said, you guys, wait a minute. Is it a drop? Is it shaky? And so I'm in line having a panic attack, and I'm like, you guys didn't tell me this. I thought it was just a ride going through like some of the scenes for the movie. I didn't know it was an actual ride. You did not tell me. And so my eyes kind of filled up with tears a little bit, and Dylan, my youngest, is like, oh great, look at her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Michael is comforting me, and Jimmy Mack is like, no, you can leave. There's always an exit. And I said, you guys, I really cannot go on this ride. So they show a video of what the ride entails, and I'm like almost fainting. I'm like, you guys, I cannot do this. So all of a sudden, Dylan, who was bothered that I was annoyed, puts his arm around me, goes, Mom, there's always a way out. We'll find you a way out. I get it. I know you feel trapped right now.
It's in the keeping of the Indiana Jones movies. He was really staying in character.
He really...
We'll find a way out.
And he did, and I had to do the walk of shame. I'm like, where's the exit? Where's the exit? And I walked out, and then I felt better.
No kidding. I mean, I don't care where you go. Can we go with you next year?
Yeah, we have to go with you. We have to see this firsthand. Because I'm sure they relayed
this. They said I wouldn't have done well. Because it's really rickety and shaky.
But it's not fast. There's no big drops or anything.
I get sick.
Yeah?
I couldn't have done that.
Yeah. All right.
My neck, I'm like a human bobblehead on some of these rides.
Here's what I would use as a gauge if I were you. If you see like 4-year-old kids in line who are like, I've been on this a million times. Because no one's going to build a ride that, you know, makes little kids scared and stuff, you know? So if you see little kids, you go, well, obviously, if this kid's in line, I can do this, right?
I did Snow White and I did very well.
Top speed in Snow White?
2.
Half a mile an hour.
Did you do the teacups?
We didn't do that. They spin, don't they? See,
yes,
I can't
do
that.
They spin.
I'm no fun, okay? I really am no fun. Go anywhere without me, and you'll have more fun.
You should go with my husband. He won't go on any rides.
Well, I did some. When they came out, they just said, you know, we have all agreed you wouldn't have fared well.
Really? Because that is not a very, I mean, there is some jolting, but
I don't like rides at all.
All right.
They make me do Splash Mountain, and that I start getting a little anxiety as we're, you know, the click. Click, click, click.
That's the scariest part of any ride is the incline going up. There's no. That's always the scariest because then you're anticipating what's going to come next.
I always look at the people leaving the ride, and if you know, you figure there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people have been on that ride before you that day.
Right.
And
they
and
have
most
better
of them
stomachs than I do. My equilibrium's off. In fact, at Universal Studios, you know, we love The Simpsons as a family. Everybody who doesn't love The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. There's this whole Simpsons land, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And we had a Duff beer at Moe's. Mm-hmm. We got the donuts.
You just did that this week?
Yeah, Universal.
At Universal, yeah?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know if you did that one in Orlando or if you did the one in California.
No, we did Universal. The tour that behind the scenes is like...
It's really cool,
that's
isn't it?
Worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
The Good Place with Ted Danson was filming, and I was hoping to get discovered, so I did my hair and makeup perfectly that day. No one looked at me. But that was really cool. But the Simpsons ride, you go in a room... And, you know, Jim's like, oh, it's just like Star Tours. You're just going to watch.
It's a simulator.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Have you done that ride?
Yeah.
I spent the rest of the first drop, which you're on a virtual roller coaster.
Right.
And Maggie's giant and it's weird and it's crazy. I had to put my head down. I was getting sick.
But you know, in a simulator, you're just in like a little elevator and they're moving it around,
know,
up and down, up and down.
The whole point of it is to give you the sensation of like, you know, your stomach goes up to your throat. I don't like that feeling. Who likes that feeling?
Everyone else but you.
I guess. It was too much. It was way too much for me.
Yeah.
I mean, even if we just go visit the Lincoln Museum in Springfield.
That might be a bit much, Steve.
No.
The hologram?
Yeah, that could scare Wendy.
Unless it's, you know, Lincoln going down a roller coaster with Thomas Jefferson.
That was a lot worse for that.
And John Williams narrating it.
Right.
Then, you know,
then you're
I
out.
Can't do it.
Yeah. All right. So knowing this, overall, you still had a good time somehow.
A great time.
How'd you pull that off?
Because I just knew, like, you know, next time I'm not going on the Simpsons ride.
Yeah.
And another buffer day, and then we went to Seal Beach, which is kind of near Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
And it's like in between Huntington and Long Beach. We didn't know where to go, and so I picked the closest beach to our hotel. And it was, I don't typically enjoy the ocean because I don't like sand. I didn't have to worry about the sand. I spent the whole day in the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Right.
The waves were great. I realized the kids have been in oceans before, but not since they've been, you know, on
old
their own.
To know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We just spent the whole day surfing waves, just body surf. It was so fun.
Good. Well, you deserved it. Good.
And my dog was through Rover.com. He stayed at a place with another dog, so he had a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It was. I have no complaints.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Write a book called Wendy Snyder's Guide to Disneyland. Where just you just show a picture of every ride and go, I wouldn't go on this one.
You know, I could rate it with green faces. You know, like this is five green faces.
It
do that.
A coffee table book.
Right. Right. Just think about it. Consider it. All right. We'll take a quick break, then some news, then more show. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Wendy's back from vacation. Well rested.
I am. I really
you look
am.
Well. You do. You look.
You had a glow.
Yeah, there was a glow. Of course, there were a lot of rumors around the WGN offices of what was causing that glow. I said radiation. I said Wendy was close to radiation.
Who said pregnant?
No one did. Everyone, right, said, everyone believed me. Radiation.
I thought your eyelids looked a little tighter. We were right. Worried about that. Maybe.
Yes.
No, but I need to get that surgery. Isn't there Steve Bertrand plasticsurgery.com?
Not yet.
Well,
a
work
division
on
of
that.
Steve Bertrand Travel.
I can be your poster girl.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I'll be the before.
Be nice? All right. As you know, Wendy, baseball is America's pastime. You can't argue that. Everybody loves baseball, but there were a couple of interesting stories over the weekend from the world of baseball. You want to start out with the sadder one or the really sadder one? Which one? I'll leave it to you.
Let's start. Just go.
All right.
Sadder.
While you were gone, the All-Star game was played in Washington, D.C., and one of the guys who pitched in the All-Star game is a Milwaukee Brewer by the name of Josh Hader. And I want to just give a little background about what happened with him before we tell you what happened over the weekend with Josh Hader. Josh Hader, a very effective pitcher with the Brewers, like I said, made the All-Star team for the first time. While he's pitching in the All-Star game on Tuesday night, all of a sudden tweets that he had sent out years earlier come to light. Like, nobody really knew that this was going to be an issue. And as a
17-year-old.
Right. These were all things that he had tweeted as a 17-year-old. He talked about how he does not like gay people. He mentioned the KKK in a favorable way. He said that women should only be used to cook clean and for sexual purposes.
Comes the microphone. Microphone is...
He did his Orion Samuelson impression.
He's very good at that.
He's very
too.
Good at the Orion Samuelson impression. I got to give him that.
I mean, you think
best one
there.
Ever.
Yeah. So all things that were extremely negative for all the groups that I mentioned. These were when he was 17 years old. Steve, he's now 26 years old.
I want to. I don't remember.
Mid 20s.
Still, listen. 17-year-olds are stupid sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not. Saying yeah. He shouldn't be doing those, period. I'll say that.
Right.
But 17-year-olds, I mean, I'm trying to explain this to my kids. Be careful what you put on social media because it's going to come back to bite you in the ass, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Yep. It's there forever.
It is.
People always go, well, it goes away. Doesn't really
no.
go away. As this case clearly points out, it doesn't ever really go away. So they do a press conference after the game. He doesn't even know this is an issue while he's pitching. He finds out later. His family, who goes to see him pitch, they're all wearing jerseys with his name and number on it. Major League Baseball comes over and they go, hey, guys, you got to come with us. They make them change clothes because everybody becomes aware of the situation very, very quickly. That's how quickly word spreads on the internet. All right. So flash forward to over the weekend. Oh, he, by the way, as a very important side note to this, apologized profusely and said, hey, please understand, those things were said years ago. I was 17 years old, wasn't thinking clearly. It's not what I believe now. I apologize for what I said. Went out of his way to let you know. Very tearful, by the way.
Oh.
Teammates came out of the woodwork to defend him and talk about what a good guy he is. All right. He pitches for the first time over the weekend in Milwaukee, and he comes out. to a standing ovation. So now the conjecture is, what's wrong with the people of Milwaukee to give a standing ovation to a guy who's racist and homophobic and misogynist? Why would you give a standing ovation to that guy?
I'll bet you 70% of those people who stood up didn't even know this story existed.
I think
it was a big story.
Yeah, and it was a major story, and if you're in Milwaukee, it's an even bigger story.
But, well,
what, Steve? You can say.
You have mixed emotions, don't you, Steve?
I don't have mixed emotions. We're too fast to condemn and to overanalyze everything. This guy's been welcomed back by his teammates. This was the first time for his fans to weigh in on it, and they were saying, "We've got your back."
But would it there have been a more appropriate way?
Let me say it differently, Bill, because you got your back means maybe they would defend him no matter what. I think what they were, I choose to say they were saying, we understand and, you know, we are supportive of you.
I'm so torn on this.
You're there to watch a baseball game.
You're there to watch a baseball game, but it really does send a weird mixed message, because what you're seeing outwardly is people standing up and applauding for a guy who at some point in his life did not like gay people, did not like black people, and thought that women were only good for sex and cleaning. So in a weird way, you're kind of applauding for that, but you're not really, because you're applauding for the fact that maybe here's a guy, hopefully, who's changed his ways.
Again, a kid at 17, I have boys that are pretty good, even though I complain about them all the time.
And hey, they're stuck out on the balcony, Wendy. How did that happen? Look, I see them out in our balcony.
Here's the weird thing. We don't have a balcony.
How did you get out there?
You know, sometimes they say really stupid things.
Sure.
And I'm not even talking about racist things or misogynistic things.
Right.
Just sometimes they say stupid things. And I don't know. I have mixed emotions too. I don't agree with what he said, but he's a grown man now.
Right.
Perhaps he doesn't feel that way anymore.
Right. Hopefully he does not feel that way anymore.
I don't know that he does. Didn't he say
a lot of times, you know, there's an obligatory apology that comes with acts like this. And we've all seen him 100 times where somebody realizes that maybe their career is on the line, that they've said or done the wrong thing. And then they give that kind of fake apology because somebody told them you have to give an apology. So they do. I watched his apology. It seemed, to me anyway, extremely genuine. That said, if he was pitching for the Cubs and he walked out to the mound, or the White Sox, if he was walking out to the mound and I was at the game, I would have a very hard time standing up and applauding for him. I would just kind of keep to myself and go, okay, there's the guy who's had an interesting week, and I wouldn't go out of my way to stand up and applaud and hoot and holler.
Then why even go to the game?
Remember 2 years ago when the Cubs got a relief pitcher from the Yankees?
And I can never remember his name.
I can't either. Steve, do you remember his name? The guy who was throwing 103 miles an hour. He was their closer. So the Yankees are going to deal him to somebody. And I said to you, I hope we don't get him. I don't want him on the team. I know he'd be a good guy in terms of, you know, doing the job that he's paid to do. He's a great relief pitcher. He throws faster than anyone else in baseball, harder than anyone else in baseball. I don't want him on the team. The whole season that he was with the team, which was really a half a season, I didn't applaud or cheer for him once because I thought he was bad blood. I thought he was bad for the team.
What the heck was his name?
He ended up being good for the team in that they won the World Series, but I didn't like the fact that they threw him in there.
Chapman?
Yeah, Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
That's the guy. Yeah.
I know. It really bothered you when they acquired him.
Right. I just thought, keep things pure. Even this will sound idiotic, but I mean this. Even if it meant them not winning the World Series, I was okay with that. I just didn't want them to see, I didn't want them to bring in a guy that was so filled with hate. You know, this was a guy who had all kinds of domestic abuse issues and stuff like that. So as this relates to Josh Hader, if he was a hometown hero for either the White Sox or the Cubs and went through everything he's just been through with the Brewers, I couldn't applaud for the guy. I couldn't give him a standing ovation.
I'd need to talk to him first.
Would you say, have a sit down with him? Find out what his intentions are? Yeah. All right. Your thoughts, 312-981-7200. We'll discuss this and other topics next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I was there last night looking for Hamilton tickets.
Yeah? Any luck?
Still a little out of my price range.
No? That'll happen for the next 25 or 30 years, and then things will level off. You'll be fine.
Even without a service charge.
I know. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about Josh Hader. Josh Hader is a pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, who years and years ago, when he was 17, tweeted some awful things about gay people, about black people, about women. It came back to haunt him during the All-Star game. Now he returns to Milwaukee over the weekend and pitches in Saturday's game to thunderous applause, a standing ovation. What are your thoughts on that? 312-981-7200.
Want to talk to Frank?
Yes.
All right, Frank's on the line. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Frank. Bill, I kind of side with you, but what I will say is that there's probably two different perspectives. When Hader came out onto the field, people gave a standing ovation, and I bet you a lot of people, maybe half the attendance there, didn't even know who he was, what he's about, and it's kind of a domino effect. When people start applauding, then, you know, it's a domino effect where people just stand up to applaud because other people are applauding. And then there's other people there that are on the fence who are very forgiving by saying, well, he made an apology, and he was young when he did what he did. And as long as it doesn't happen present day, I guess people are more forgiving. But it doesn't, in my eyes, you know, there should be some consequence that happens when people make those kinds of comments, because they weren't very light comments.
He's going to have to go through some what they call sensitivity training. That's what they decided. He's not going to pay a fine. He's not going to be suspended for any games, but he'll have to take some classes, sensitivity training. I don't know. I guess that's enough. I don't know for sure. But if you were at the game, Frank, if he was a hometown hero, a White Sox player or a Cubs player, and you were there at the game, would you have been able to stand and applaud for him at this point?
No, I wouldn't have. And you know what, though, that sensitivity training, that may just be a PR stunt
to
say that we're going to put him through the training, and this is our way of disciplining him to try to correct his mannerism.
Right, it is.
Although when you're at the game, you get so caught up in the moment, and I'm serious. I'm sure a lot of people think that. I'm at a game. Yeah, what he does outside, I don't agree with, but I'm here to support him as a player.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people will go through issues, but I don't know. I think in the long run, they're at the game, they're going to stand up.
Yeah, there's something to that.
I believe a lot of people don't really follow baseball the way older people do. I mean, when you years ago, you used to be able to go to the ballpark and you used to see several people filling out a scorecard. Now everybody's on their phone, not even paying attention to what's going on. So if one person's applauding, oh, I guess we should applaud. Let's applaud because we're applauding.
Yeah, and someone has texted, and I tried to make this point earlier, but not as well as the texter. Sometimes teenage boys say things they don't mean just to impress their friends. He may not have even felt that way back then.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but it's one thing to say it, but then there's certainly something else to be saying when you tweet it, when you actually put it into scripture.
We know that as adults, okay? And we're not as tech savvy as they are. I swear to God, these kids today think, oh, it just goes away. It doesn't. You have to scroll back a while and work for it, but boy, it's up there forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frank.
Okay.
The text lines are somewhere on the 50-50 yard line. Some people supporting him, some people saying no, you know, even at 17. And I'm kind of this thought, no matter what you felt at 17, no matter how dark your thoughts are, sharing them online, a huge, huge mistake. I wouldn't even try to have those thoughts at 17. I know you can't control what your thoughts are at 17, but,
but even
what about a guy? If
you did feel that way, you wouldn't voice them.
No. But if you're, let's say one of your kids brought home a friend who said any of those things, wouldn't you say to your kids, are you sure that's a guy you want to hang out with?
Yes, after I kicked him out of the house.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, and Jerry's on the line. Hey, Jerry.
Hi, good morning. How are you today?
Good.
I agree with you as far as your statement that you said, just turn off, and you don't want to go to the game, don't go to the game. But, you know, being 60-plus, I've looked over the years that with social media, it just explodes. You're going to catch anything on film, your cell phones or tweets or whatever. If this happened 20 years ago and we were in its present time at that point, you never would have heard about it.
Right.
Because it wasn't sensationalism. And as a nation, so my protest, I don't go to games. I don't pay those millionaires. I won't do anything. As I told your producer, I turn on WGN. I've listened to it since Franklin McCormick and Wally Phillips were there. That's my entertainment.
You should have seen some of their tweets.
Yeah, it would be wonderful to go see it. And some of the jokes that were told years ago was great. We passed them on, but we just thought it was a chuckle. We've just lost our core as a country, and we've gotten way too soft, and people need to move. You guys do a great job, yourself, Bill, Steve, all great job by putting a balance in there. it's got to come back sooner or later. The man upstairs got to throw a bolt up somebody and say, hey, let's stop. Because it's just disingenuous to all of us.
Thank you for your call, Jerry. We appreciate you listening as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'll continue. Keep having fun. Just keep building straight.
Thank you, Jerry.
Don't look to me for help on that one.
Impossible.
And also, and I hate to change the subject, but we should talk about this maybe on the stream today because the bonus hour is back in action. James Gunn, the director, the writer, right, of Guardians of the Galaxy, he had tweeted a bunch of things, and I saw the screen grab of 10 to 20 things about the Giving Tree, and it's dealing with pedophilia and weird things. And it's not even that funny, first of all. And these were done when, what, 10
years ago?
Years ago?
Yeah, there was a joke about rape, which seems like you go, wait, there was a joke about rape? Yeah, there's that kind of stuff.
A NAMBLA mention.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
they
yeah.
weren't funny, and they were weird, and a lot of kids go to these movies,
yeah.
and Disney said no way and relieved him of his duties, and a lot of people are calling for him to be reinstated.
Yeah.
That's something we should explore later, too.
Yeah, we can talk about that on the stream, definitely, because some of his the people he's worked very closely with on the Guardians of the Galaxy movies have come to his defense. Some have gone out of their way to just kind of remain distant from it.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah, Chris Pratt.
At Comic-Con in San Diego.
Yeah.
Didn't want to talk about it. What yeah. would Mickey Mouse say?
I'm not getting into this one, Wendy. Thanks, but no thanks, Bob.
Where's my $200, Mickey?
Gone with the wind.
All right, let's take a quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
The Beatles. I feel like Terry Hemmert right there. Breakfast with the Beatles.
I thought you were going Ed Sullivan. I was waiting for you to awkwardly turn around like he would always do.
No, I just do that normally.
The Beatles! Just awkwardly flip around.
When we were in California, Dylan bought... We went to this awesome place called Amoeba Records in downtown L.A.
Yeah.
And he bought the DVD of the Ed Sullivan Beatles appearance.
Oh,
I can't
nice.
Wait to watch it.
That's excellent. Whose voice is that, Wendy?
It's the unrecognizable or recognizable, I don't know which to use, Patrick McDonald. We usually talk to him about films.
Yes.
He's a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, and you have a special event that I'm going to go to tonight.
Yes. Wow.
And it involves the Beatles.
Even more special. That's right. It is the After Hours Film Society presentation of the 50th anniversary screening of Yellow Submarine.
Nice.
Can I confess I've never seen it?
Oh, even better.
So I can see it on the big screen.
Even better.
It's very colorful.
Yes.
I mean, it is splashed in color. They went out of their way to make this incredibly filled with color.
Phasmagoric.
Phasmagoric, some would say. Well, you just did. You just did. 50 years. How did that happen so quickly?
I don't know. July 17th, 1968 was the English premiere. So we're a week away from that. So very close. It premiered in the U.S. in November mm-hmm. of 1968.
How was it received, Patrick?
It was a smash.
It was
a
right
smash
away,
hit.
Huh?
Basically, it's in the Beatles canon. It's just part of that whole magic that happened with them from, you know, 62 to 1970.
They could do no wrong.
They could do no wrong, even if somebody else was doing the project.
Well, I hope that leads into what
yes.
I was about to ask. The voices of the Beatles
right.
and Yellow Submarine are not provided by the Beatles.
That is correct. Now, the genesis of this was Brian Epstein. He thought a cartoon would be a good idea because, of course, they were doing the Beatles cartoons in the U.S. on ABC TV.
Mm-hmm. I remember
which
those.
Which lasted from 65 to 67.
Mm-hmm. And the Beatles also did not do the voices for that.
Right.
Right. Paul Frees was that
Paul
the guy?
Paul Frees. Boris Badenoff.
Really?
Yeah.
voices of
Boris
John
Badenoff was doing the voices of the Beatles.
Oh, my God.
First we get Moose and Squirrel, then we get Rolling Stones.
Then we get Ringo.
Al Brodax was the creator of that show, so Epstein approached him and said, hey, let's do something. So what Al hired George Dunning, who was a director, and he was also a part of the Beatles cartoon show. But that was the only connection. They wanted to create something different, and Dunning went out and he found Heinz Elderman, who created the look of the film, and it's mistaken a lot for Peter Max.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very
it's
Peter
Max
like.
I'm sure he took credit for it, but that's another
thing. We talked to him. He didn't.
He didn't
okay,
take credit. Yeah, Peter
fine.
Max did not. But
he's
it was
a nice guy.
It was semi-intentional. I mean, that was
yes.
the look of art in 1967, 68.
That was psychedelic.
Yeah.
You know,
they looked really cute in as cartoons.
Yes, they did.
We were coming back on the flight from California, and again, both my sons like the Beatles, but I love that Dylan's 15 and is really into them. We had to wash his Yellow Submarine shirt that he's going to wear tonight. But he said an interesting thing to me. He said, "Wow, we were looking at your advert." I'm British. And 50, he said, this is the 50th anniversary. He goes, Mom, you know what? I'm probably going to be alive for the 100th.
Yeah,
and I said, you really will be. That's wild. I'll be dead and buried, so have fun.
Unless they invent some life. But
they might.
That's
they
pretty might. Weird when I thought about it that way.
Yeah.
It is strange.
Yeah.
It is strange. And it will be up to him to carry that torch to the 100th. Who knows what kind of imagery.
He's already got it booked at the Tivoli to go out there and host this 50 years from now. Yeah.
Perfect.
So why, getting back to the voices for just a second, why? I know the Beatles were very busy during this period, but is that what kept them from doing the voices
not,
for the movie?
Not necessarily. When they heard that they were going to do a movie, they thought it was going to be like the TV show.
Yeah.
So they just rejected it out of hand because at that time, they were kind of embarrassed by the TV show.
It was great!
It was. Well, now they
America.
Love it, you know? But
Phil, what?
John
it
Clive.
Wasn't great.
It
you
was
know,
fun.
I love the Beatles, but it really is kind of a blemish on all the things they did, you know.
But it's part, again, it's part of that thing that happened. But
right.
John Clive played the voice of John. Jeffrey Hughes was Paul. Now, this is an interesting story. There was a guy named Peter Batten. And then while he was doing the film, he was discovered to be a deserter of the British Army.
Oh, no.
So they arrested him.
Oh.
So Paul Angelus finished the George voice. So
and
two people did George.
Just to be clear, when the Beatles are singing in Yellow Submarine, that's your Beatles.
That's the
but
Beatles,
when they're speaking, it's the guys you just mentioned.
Yes. You know, Yellow Submarine, Ella Rigby, All Together Now, which was written for the film. Only a Northern Song, written for the film. Hey Bulldog, written for the film. And it's All Too
Much. I'm already psyched.
Look
I'm
at
ready.
Wendy. And Wendy will be dressed like a blue meanie tonight. You'll know it's Wendy.
No, that's just my regular look. I'm a yellow meanie. It's not that funny, Patrick.
They played Lady Madonna at the top, and there's an interesting story about Lady Madonna in association with Yellow Submarine. They were recording Hey Bulldog, and a camera crew came in to do the do a promotional film, as they call it in those days, for Lady Madonna.
Yeah.
It was discovered years later that if they sunk up Hey Bulldog, you can actually see the Beatles recording a song.
Oh, really?
Go on YouTube and see Hey Bulldog, and it's the Beatles recording that very song for Yellow Submarine.
Very good.
It's the After Hours Film Society, and it's a special screening of Yellow Submarine tonight only.
Debbie Venezia, she is the executive director. She does a great job with this thing. AfterHoursFilmSociety.com.
Tonight only, Tivoli Theater, 5021 Highland Avenue in Downers Grove. If you see me, let me cut in line. It starts at 7:30. They're expecting a big crowd. So get there early. And again, let me cut in line. And tickets are, if you're members, it's $8, otherwise $12, non-members. And classiccinemas.com is where you can purchase tickets. Shall we take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break and then more with Patrick McDonald. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Patrick McDonald is here, and he's very pleased with the music choice. Hosting a big event tonight, the 50th anniversary of Yellow Submarine. Patrick, again, explain to people how they can get involved.
AfterHoursFilmSociety.com is the information. Wendy just mentioned the tickets are $8 and $12, $8 for members, $12 for non-members. 7:30 tonight, Downers Grove, 5021 Highland Avenue, the Tivoli Theater.
Oh, oh great
it's a
theater.
Classic.
Isn't that nice? So beautiful.
Yeah.
ClassicCinemas.com.
So beautiful.
Yeah. All right. So Wendy mentioned a little while ago a big story that's going on in Hollywood right now. There's a guy named James Gunn.
Yes.
Whose name may be familiar to some of you, but not everybody. I think most notably he would be known as the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy films, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he's all set to direct. I don't think they've started production on it yet, but he is signed to be the director in the third installment. And then all of a sudden they go back and they find some things that he's written in the past, some ugly, nasty tweets, some what were attempted jokes.
Not funny.
But not that funny.
No,
right.
No.
So Disney did what?
It was a mistake.
Disney?
They fired him.
They fired him.
Yeah.
These were pretty terrible tweets.
Yes, they were. And, you know, he tried to bring it out as I'm a provocateur, that sort of thing. This is what I do. He was a young guy, obviously, when he did these tweets.
How young? I mean, how long ago were these tweets? Because that I haven't been able to find out.
It was over a period of time. They weren't all, like with the Josh Hader ones we were talking about, they were all in a very small window. He was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
These James Gunn tweets evidently continued for quite a while.
Goes back to the old saying is never write anything down that you don't want tattooed on your forehead in an open casket.
That old saying again.
There's another element to this story that is interesting. Gunn is it's a progressive, and he has been very vocal in his criticism of the current administration and the people surrounding it. And you know that side of the aisle has a pretty big research department.
Yeah,
they're going after people who are vocal about some of this stuff, and they are the ones that unearth these tweets. So.
Right.
This is where we're at right now. I mean,
so it starts out political, but it gets even more political, doesn't it?
Precisely.
With somebody looking to find something bad about them, and they found it.
Well, you know, and again, do I agree with the firing? I'm not sure. That if you have to, you know, your whole history has to be examined, and if that's part of it, and it's there printed out, and it, like you said, not funny.
They're not funny. Silly, it was disturbing.
And, you know, the corporation makes this decision.
Right, right. His co-stars have been kind of mixed in their response to this. Some supported him right away and said, this is ridiculous. The guy is too talented to just let him go like this. Others have been very noticeably quiet.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what to do.
Well, I think
and
that's
are they
the best
like
route.
Chris Pratt? If he chooses to be in the next, or he's been in those, do people look at him badly? Because I don't
association. You
yeah,
mean?
But he didn't know.
Not really. I mean, how could they know when they were filming it? Right.
And who's going to do it now? Them. Ron Howard?
Oh, please.
Well, he came in and rescued the Star Wars movie.
I never thought the suggestion of Ron Howard directing a movie would bring an oh, please from a film critic, but it just did. Wow.
What happens? Because the other two were great movies. Do people not rent them now? What happens? I loved the movies.
It's really tough.
To me, it seems like an insider story, but... Now it's gotten outside because of the firing. So, you know, you have to make your own decision based on that.
But Disney's coming off of a situation with one of the head honchos at Pixar.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's that to consider. Wasn't the movie Powder also a Disney production, or am I making that up? Am I wrong about that?
I'd have to look it up.
Direct this movie Powder, which was an interesting movie.
It's a very interesting film.
But the dark side of that story is the guy who directed that had some child molestation charges.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, that's, you know, obviously a huge problem.
So the actor who was in Ferris Bueller's A Principal, I can't think of
Jeffrey Jones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, another incident.
Here's an idea. Accident. Let's, like, be normal people. Let's not break laws. Let's not do bad things.
No room for that.
And then you don't have to worry about it coming back to haunt you.
Right. But couldn't you, if you are a parent or you are somebody teaching kids about the dangers of the internet, couldn't you use James Gunn's story and this guy Josh Hader's story as honestly as saying, look at these two guys who could lose their livelihood because of something they wrote when they were younger?
Absolutely. And, you know, just simply say that saying.
Yeah.
You know, don't write anything down that you don't want tattooed on your forehead in an open casket.
Right.
Because everything that you write down, and now in the social media realm, everything that goes out there, that's on you.
Yep.
That's on you. And it can be used in a court of law later. You know, when you think about it.
I've been explaining that to my kids because those stories came up where they could keep you out of college for something.
Sure, absolutely.
You could not get hired for a job because of something.
If you go back into the early years of Facebook, I just wrote stupid things and I put ellipses everywhere. It was dot, dot, dot. And then I'd write something dot, dot, dot. And I look at it now and I was like, God, is that annoying.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was new to it.
I would write horrible things and said, Wendy told me to say this. I don't believe in it, but Wendy's a huge fan of it.
I would say if you go over your accounts and you got something there that you think might be questioned, just delete the whole thing and start over.
Oh, good idea.
You know? But hurry up because people are going to go back now and screenshot
it. I also believe that nothing deleted, everything that's deleted can be
You can find
back.
It somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Bill's basement.
It's all there. I got boxes and boxes of it.
The deleted files.
Yeah.
Can I say one other quick thing?
No.
I am on the board of directors of a theater event called Yippie Fest, which will be August 18th or 17th, 18th, and 19th. YippieFest.com. If you have an act and you want to get into a theater fest, we're taking music, we're taking puppetry, we're taking Bill's stand-up.
Bring your puppet.
I'll bring my puppet.
And
so, yeah, we still have some room for some acts, so get out there.
What's Yippie a Yippie
Fest.
Again? I know there were hippies.
Youth International Party. We're on the 50th anniversary of the Yippies invading Chicago next month.
And again, explain that a little more, people standing up for things?
Well, it was the Vietnam War era. The Yippies came to protest the Vietnam War during the Democratic National Convention at the International Amphitheater, by the way.
Weren't hippies there, too? Hippies and yippies got along, didn't they?
You could be a hippie and a Yippie, couldn't you?
Yes.
Yeah? You could be a Yippie, a Yappie, and a Yahooey. Do you remember those guys? The cartoon? Love those guys.
What's the website?
YippieFest.com. You can sign up your act, and it'll be amazing.
Oh, it'll be amazing, Wendy.
Over three days of music.
Wait, are you hosting this thing tonight? Are you emceeing this Yellow Submarine?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'll see you tonight.
Yes, and I'll have you stand up in the crowd.
No, don't do that.
I will.
Then I'm not going.
Oh, please.
Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. It's a great classic cinema.
Says again.
Can I ask you one more quick question before you go?
Yes.
There's only a month left in the summer movie season.
Yes.
And then what normally starts is the really good movies come out in the fall.
Right.
But as blockbusters have come and gone this summer, do we have anything else big to look forward to before the summer?
I think the big last two is Mission Impossible, which comes out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Spy Who Dumped Me. That's been getting a lot of
that
big
looks good.
Kate McKinnon's
press.
In that?
Uh-huh.
I think Kate McKinnon's in that from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So that I think that's a good one for August. That's a
Is Fantastic
comedy.
Beasts, is that a summer movie or will that be out? There's a
that's
sequel to
coming in the fall.
Oh, that's in the fall?
Yeah.
That's the sequel to Sexy Beast?
Yeah,
I think
the sequel
Crazy
to Crazy
Rich Asians, too, is coming
out. I just
out.
Saw an ad for that. I thought it was a parody, and it's that's really the name, and that's
a
really
book,
the movie.
Apparently, and
Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
I know people can't see the look on Wendy's face, but I'm watching this going, oh, this is a great parody. This looks like a real movie. And then it's a real movie.
Well, it's just about a guy's living in the U.S. and his fiance doesn't know he's like super rich in Singapore, like one of the richest guys. So,
yep.
And it just goes into that culture of richness.
Sounds like a crazy name to name it in this day and age.
I thought so too.
Maybe it's not Crazy Rich Asians.
If it's not,
I've done this before.
It's something extremely similar. If it's not, but I think you're right.
Let me just
because that seems like not a good
like
name
somebody would complain and go hey what are you doing with that title
people would complain
and crazy yes, people and rich people
That's what it is, Crazy Rich Asians.
That's it.
Wow.
That's
times
it.
Have changed,
yeah,
and that's okay.
Times
why aren't people boycotting this like everything else?
I don't know.
I'm sure somebody will.
I think when it's about wealth, you know,
all bets are off.
Yeah, all bets are off.
I guess so. All right.
Yeah, it's not making anybody look bad. It's making them look good.
I think so. Yeah. Patrick, always good to see you. One more time, the film is
Yellow Submarine.
50th anniversary. Yep. Thanks, Patrick. All right. We'll take a quick break, then some news, and then Eric Zorn joins us. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We do.
Yeah, well, you have to.
I missed Eric Zorn last week.
He's
contractually obligated.
Yes. We don't want to, but the bosses have told us we must. Yeah, so we do every week at this time.
So sorry.
How are you, Eric? Everything good?
I'm good. Thanks.
One of your topics couldn't be more timely. Wendy's fresh back from a vacation from California and from Disneyland. And it wasn't you, but your co-writer, Mary Schmeiko, wrote a very interesting article.
Mary Schmeiko wrote a piece, and I'm always happy to steal ideas from Mary,
sure.
After the fact especially, but about etiquette tips for your return. And I was actually thinking about this morning, coming into work. I was gone last week also.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mary points out that first of all, you should not One of her tips is don't brag about how great your vacation was, that people really don't want to hear that you had a great time because they were here working.
But you want to acknowledge the fact that everything went well. You
and
know,
usually mine right? go so horribly that it was right. nice to be able to right. say, we had a great time.
Yeah. And it, but her other point, which I think is worth saying, is be brief. Tip two is be brief. She says, when you return from vacation, polite people will ask you this question, and you may take it as license to describe everything, every meal, every hotel, every campground, every dirty rental car.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't listen to Mary earlier.
She said, resist that urge. And this is a great line. She said, other people's vacations are like their dietary habits and sex lives, boring to anyone not directly involved.
But then don't ask.
It's obligatory to ask. You want to acknowledge it all. You want to ask a little.
Well, she points out that saying, how was your vacation, is a bit like saying, how do you do?
How are you?
Or how's it going?
Things?
Yeah, is that people don't really want you to say, well, sit down. I have a lot to say about that.
But do you remember a time, I don't know if it's just my family, but we had several relatives and even a neighbor or two who, upon returning from a vacation, you'd go to their house and you'd watch slides.
Yes.
Like
on the carousel.
Every detail. Yeah,
and it could take hours. I'll go around going, okay, it's got to be coming back to zero.
But I kind of enjoyed it. I mean, sometimes the evenings got a little lengthy, but it was kind of fun to see everything that happened wherever they were.
It's like show and tell.
Yeah, it is kind of like show and tell.
Well, vacations can be really interesting. Mary goes on vacations that I think are fascinating. She goes to like this yoga retreat out in California where there's a lot of solitude. They are completely cut off from the internet, from any social media, anything like that. So they're basically there to meditate, do yoga, interact with one another, but not interact with the outside world. So she's like completely off the grid for a week. I think that's interesting.
That is interesting.
I think
why she doesn't want to hear about your vacation. She's busy meditating.
She's in her own headspace.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, but it's that would just drive me nuts. I mean,
I couldn't do it.
I would be tense all the time wondering what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was last week. I was since you didn't ask.
You weren't here last week.
I was not here.
Oh,
last week.
I wasn't either. So
Kristen McQuarrie sat in for me. She did a great job as usual. She's really good.
She's very good.
She is good.
Despite
yeah.
her politics, which I don't. But I love Kristen McQuarrie.
That was a subtle dig.
No, not subtle at all. Yeah. I would say it to her face. She knows that. But I was out. I was out in the mountains of North Carolina at an old time music camp.
Oh, fun!
It was great fun. And
run the slides. Can we see the slides?
Yeah, I brought in a few photos. No, I have some recordings that I want to play.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding. But I couldn't, I had to watch, stuff about Helsinki. I had to follow all that. And
then
this business that was breaking in Chicago about the barber who was shot.
Yeah.
Protests about that. So I'm like, in between these lovely sessions, this beautiful setting, and just playing music, and then everyone gets along out there. Everyone's really friendly. I didn't have a single conversation about Donald Trump all week.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Nice.
Every conversation I have around here devolves to Trump in about 20 minutes, always.
Right.
And now, around them, people were just talking about
music
and dance and song. It was really terrific. But I was, of course, I would sneak away and read Twitter.
Because you're a journalist. You got to keep up with things.
It's not just journalism. I think there are a number of people who are
busybodies.
No, they're compulsive about keeping up. It's like you don't, you're looking at your email, you're looking at all these, you're looking at Facebook, you just always want to stay plugged in, which is why this vacation that Mary takes is so fascinating to me. I thought actually about seeing if the Tribune would sponsor me to go and I'd write about it, after the fact.
Oh, good move.
Or have maybe both of us go on the same trip and then come back and report on our different experiences. I mean, I think I would be out of my skin in a day or two. Like, I would want to know what's going on.
You never know, though. You might find solace
in that. I might get that sort of repose that Mary has that I don't have. So
normally when my wife and I take a trip, and even when the girls are involved, we have a rule, and it's mostly for me because I'm the TV addict in the family.
Mm-hmm.
No TV. Just enjoy the week, enjoy wherever we are, and don't worry about the TV. Now, we've amended it a little bit because during baseball season, I need to know what the Cubs and the White Sox are. I have to know.
Yes.
It's part of my job. But it really is.
It's not part of your job.
I've told them.
The narrator says.
I've explained to them it's very much part of my job. But I really, like, that first day is very strange where you go, wow, there could be something happening huge in the world. I don't know what it is. But by the second or third day, I love the fact that I'm not in tune with what's going on.
You're getting into it. Yeah, well, of course, the other thing that happens when you come back from this, and I followed the big news, but not the small news. I can read the Tribune online. I get the e-paper and everything like that. I did not open that during the
week. Not at all.
No, not that, but I was...
Getting alerts?
I was getting alerts, and I was also on the Tribune website, not the e-paper, but the website, looking for the top stories. But I realized when I got back, and this morning I spent most of this morning just reading the papers in the past week, looking back, looking through them all, and I realized how little I actually missed in terms of what I really needed to know, what I really had to find. I mean, it's a lot of interesting stuff,
sure,
but nothing that
nothing you had to know.
Like, you really had to know. I mean, I think this business with Trump and Helsinki that was really important.
Sure,
something you needed to know. But you know, all the other stuff, all the little various bits of ground pawing going on. I thought the story about Willie Wilson that broke this morning, giving out cash.
Handing out money at church.
We had a really interesting discussion about that at work. You know, people are saying that Willie Wilson's been doing this for a long time. That he's been doing this.
It was the fact that Bruce Rauner was so close, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah. And he was saying it wasn't a campaign event, but then it turns out that they were streaming the cash giveaway on his campaign website. But anyway, so Mary's point is, one other thing. She said, don't complain that your vacation is over. People don't want to hear about that. And be tolerant of people who would rather talk about their own vacation than listen to yours. And this is a key one, is don't be insulted that some people didn't notice you were gone.
Like Bertrand said to me today, were you gone last week?
That's well, at least he had some inkling, right? I mean, I would say most people at my office when I came in today didn't say anything because people are in their own space, their own lives. I mean, you're on the radio every day. People do miss you, Wendy. I'm sure they'll.
Well, they notice I'm not there anyway.
It was a persistent.
So was there a formula? Did Mary discover some magic formula for exactly how much time you can recount what happened on your vacation, or is that...
No, I think she just basically says that you have to really gauge, try to figure out what the level of interest is.
Yeah.
And the rule of thumb always is, you say a little something, if someone asks you a question about it...
Then you can build on it.
You can answer that, and if they ask you another question, you read those clues, It's like, you talk a little bit about what you did, and they say, oh, tell me more about that. Then maybe they really want to know. But if they say, oh, that sounds really nice.
Do you remember when...
Did you watch the All-Star game? No.
When Alex Haley wrote Roots. So I don't know exactly what year, but it was a bestseller. And a lot of people decided after Alex Haley went back and retraced his roots that they were going to do the same. My mom's aunt decided to do that. So she went back to Slovenia to look up what happened to her grandparents and great-grandparents.
Did she write a book?
So she did not write a book, but the whole family was invited to the house for a slide presentation. So the first slide took 4.5 minutes. She explained everything that we were looking at in the slide. And then I look over at the slide projector, those circular things where all the slides
right,
are.
Right, exactly.
There's about 110 slides in there. And I go, at 4 minutes per, I'm not going to make it to school on Monday. There's no way I'll be in school on Monday.
Right, well, the truth is that the most boring thing to talk about are people's dreams, right? And you never want to hear about anyone's dreams. It didn't actually happen. It's not interesting at all. But genealogy, other people's genealogy is really tedious.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, and this person, she swept the palace floors for the czar. And you're like, well, who cares?
Right.
It's not my family. It's your family. So it doesn't really matter. There was a podcast of short-lived podcast in which they had celebrities and they did like genealogy of celebrities. Like they went back and they traced. The first episode was Dan Savage, him, the sex advice columnist.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this could be interesting. And it was not.
That became a TV show, too.
You know?
They did a TV version of that. Yeah.
1976, Roots came out.
Yeah, 76.
You have to really gauge interest and realize that people are, it can be fascinating. Genealogy, if you want to find out that your, great-great-grandfather, Rob Banks or something like that, that's really cool. But
you don't want to know about other people's.
Nobody else cares.
Right,
nobody
I guess.
Nobody else cares.
It's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. I will take a quick break and then continue after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Eric Zorn, fine, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Eric, let's talk about longevity.
Let's talk about it. I want you guys to take a guess. What's the world record for human longevity?
The oldest somebody has ever lived.
The oldest someone has ever lived.
Wendy, take a shot.
118.
Bill?
You go 121.
Bill's closer. It was 122. If he'd gone over, it wouldn't.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We do Ben Price's Right rules.
It's 122. Is a French woman named Jeanne Clément. And the interesting thing about this is that she set this record back in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the oldest verified. You know, you hear people say that people are older, but this they could verify her age at 122.
Wow.
So the question, and so, you know, there's this joke about how the world's oldest person is always dying, and maybe there's a serial killer afoot. but nobody has even come within 3 years of her in this century, and it's the question. The question then is sort of how long can people live? What is the maximum, you know, lifespan of a human? And then these two professors, J.L. Shansky, who's at UIC, in professor of public health, and his friend Stephen Ostad, who's chairman of biology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and they've got this wager that they've made about whether human beings will be able to live to 150 years old by the year 2150. So basically,
we're out of luck.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Yeah. So the question is, you know, is someone going to live that long? And Olshansky says no. There's no way that people can live that long. And Ostad thinks that there are going to be developments in basically therapies, medication, and drugs that will make people allow people to live that long. So the person would be born, you know, basically in the year 2000. And so will someone born in the year 2000 make it to the year 2150?
Oh, that's interesting.
They've got a wager on this, and of course, they're both in retirement age now, so neither of them expect to be around anywhere close to that. But what they put some seed money into a fund that they think is going to compound interest and investment income to be close to $1 billion.
Wow!
When that time comes, and so the bet is that the descendants of each person will get that money. Now, there's a couple of things that are interesting about that. One is that if you could have, you know, the fight over that photographer. There was that woman, I'm blanking on her name. She took all those great photos on the streets of Chicago.
Yeah,
and she was this loner. This woman nobody knew, and they found like her heirs, and there's a big fight over who owns these images because they're very valuable. I can imagine there being a huge fight over this money when this debt is finally settled.
Right,
because there's going to be all kinds of shirt tail relatives who are going to be able to claim rights to it. The other thing is interesting is that $1 billion, if this you know, if the investment pays off like that, is not going to be $1 billion. By today's standards, right? Because inflation
is future standards.
So it's going to be, yeah. So it's going to, so it might only be, you know, I don't know, it might be, you know, a couple million dollars.
A few scant million.
Yeah.
Nothing to get excited about.
So well, it's split a bunch of different ways. But it really is interesting when you talk about, you know, what is the purpose of advancing lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points that Olshansky makes in talking to him is that we figured out ways to, you know, regenerate and work on organs,
sure,
and hips and knees and so on, but they have yet to come even close to figuring out how to replicate neurons in the brain, so that your brain slowly decays, as we all realize looking around in our lives, is that the older you get, your mind starts to go, and they have never figured out how to do that. So the question is, the more we can prolong life, the more we're going to see, you know, this dementia setting in, and people, you know, if you get somebody who lives to whose brain is 150 years old, the quality of life may be, you know, really close to zero. So there's this kind of debate or concern in people who are in this field of trying to extend human life is, can you extend human life and still extend the quality?
Yeah, that's
the key.
That
is the key.
Like, you know, you can get people, you know, there's some thinking that the average lifespan, which is right around 80 now, I think, in the U.S., is going to go up to around 100. But the question is it going to be, is 100 going to be the new 80? You know what I mean? In terms of,
is it 20 years better, or is it
20
not?
Years of good life, or is it just 20 years of people? Because, you know, I know I've known people who've reached 100, and it does not appeal to me when I see what that life is like.
Although, I know a couple people, I'm sure you do too, who are in that bracket and are doing great, you know?
People in their 90s, I certainly know people in their 90s who are really sharp.
We had, when it was Alzheimer's Awareness Month, so a doctor came up and explained to us that at 65, you're looking at 1 in 10 people are experiencing dementia or Alzheimer's. But when you get to 85, it's 1 in 2.
At 65?
Yeah, 65.
Oh, man.
But at 85, 1 in 2, half the people who get to that age, and that's an alarming number.
Right. And I'm not sure if that's classic Alzheimer's or if that's just kind of age-related dementia or
right.
Or whatever
that's what the
proper term is. But
Vivian Meyer, by the way, is the name of that artist you were speaking of from Rogers Park.
Who took the pictures.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Thanks for the text.
Yes, Vivian Meyer, yes. Well, Olshansky says, he says, the brain is our Achilles heel. There's no evidence to suggest that we'll be able to halt the effects of daily loss of non-replicating neurons, much less reverse it. We can replace hips and hearts and knees, but we can't replace the brain. And yet, this other guy, Austeds, he says that there's two drugs that show a lot of promise in boosting longevity. One is an immunosuppressant that helps prevent rejection in transplant patients, and the other one is a drug that's used to treat type 2 diabetes. And these have shown to prolong the life greatly in mice. And it has shown some effect in humans as well. So they're thinking that, that maybe these drugs can, because if you could slow, I mean, mm-hmm. basically the idea is to slow the process mm-hmm. of the cellular loss. But it's a fascinating subject, I think. And the idea being that there's somebody out there might still be alive at the year 2150.
But right now, if you asked, you picked the number of people, how many of you want to live to 100 or 150?
Only you.
It's only me. It's only me. Everybody else.
And he
out.
Just wants to hit the number. He doesn't even care how he is.
I want to be 100. I want to make 100. I know that's crazy, but I want to hit 100.
Yeah, you want to be one of those guys in the nursing home where they well, actually, the thing is, there's so many of them now that it's not even that big a deal. I don't think do they still do that on the Today Show where they remember
Willard Scott would always wish somebody a happy 100th birthday.
But I think there's so many of them now that that would take up the whole show.
Right.
I know. It would just be the centennial show.
Eric, thanks for being here. We'll see you in a week. It's Eric Zorn. Everybody, read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll find out what's coming up next. Wendy and I had to do the stream, but Steve has a Wintrust Business Lunch for you here on WGN.